This program brought to you by Vanderbilt University. You can find more audio and video on our website, vanderbilt.edu/news.
Okay, thank you everyone for coming. If you can imagine, there was no way we could make this into a big circle, too many people, but try to envision a circle while we're talking. This needs to be an in-the-round type situation, where not everyone is going to contribute a song necessarily, but it would be wonderful if generally everyone would feel free to come out with a thought, a question, or a comment. It was pretty late in life that I sat among some people around, not exactly around a fire, but in a circle, and most of the people could sing songs and play guitar. And I realized that as the guitar was being passed, that people were commenting on one another's commentaries, that there was a kind of intelligence gathering going on right then and there, where people were lyricizing their own experience and trying to speak to one another's experiences with the song. So we want to try and get that vibe going just as much as we can. This is part of a semester-long series for religion. Give me the title again, John, if you would. The class.
Popular Music and Religious Identity.
Okay, Popular Music and Religious Identity. We've had a number of lectures. We've had conversations about Radiohead and Eminem and hip-hop and punk rock, lots of different things. And tonight is the first of three, which will try and speak to a kind of, a particular arc of witness that will end with a sort of there's a kingdom coming, one of the last ones. Before that is a sort of it's got to get better than this. And the first one, as you might guess, is not especially uplifting. It's human condition, fall. We considered calling it Everything is Broken. It is called Everything is Broken. We considered calling it Sad Songs Say So Much. And one little anecdote that has floated around is this is a nod. It's about religious witness, but as a nod to the biblical tradition, this would be a nod to the parts of the Bible that don't necessarily look good on a poster with a basket full of puppies. Those parts that can, you know, file under complaint, lamentation, confession, that kind of thing. I have poems that I want to share. Other students that are helping lead this tonight are going to share some poems as well. Let me tell, yes, there's some chairs right there if you want them. But before I do anything, I want to introduce our people. And I will begin with Brian Ritchie over here on my right. And Brian comes from Indiana. Local singer-songwriter who would have a wide range of lyrical content, but is perhaps especially taken with the redemptive work of the misery of Brian's songs, I should say. The sad songs would be our misery, human misery, that kind of thing. But, you know, with mirth and with wit and delivered with a, with the kind of uplift that you have to earn by acknowledging the difficulties of things. And next to Brian, we have Matthew Perryman Jones, another local songwriter, who has had on the spot. The album titles are escaping me. I'm sorry. Can you tell me the latest and then the one that I have?
The latest is called Swallow the Sea, and the last one is Throwing Punches in the Dark.
Okay, Throwing Punches in the Dark, and a particular song on there that he may or may not share that really got through to me when it came up on my iPod was it's a cover of Hard Times is a sort of a traditional song. Yes. Okay. And Matthew and I have gotten to know each other in the last year and a half and have discussed some of these matters, and it seemed a really good call to bring him in. Katie Hertzig, I met around the same time that Matthew and I met, and she has a song called I Hurt Too, yes, which appeared on Bones recently. Would that be right?
It did.
Okay, and a number of folks would have songs that have appeared on, you know, television programs, you know, the getting that kind of stuff through. And Katie has a new album called
Apple Tree,
which is available on, what do you call that? Noise Trade, which may come up at some point as we're thinking about the market-driven aspect of things and different ways of doing it. Via Noise Trade, you can actually have her album for free. And is that going pretty well for you thus far? Okay. Yes. And behind me here is Carrie Gibson, who I've probably known longer than I've known anyone else up here. Carrie and I met in Belfast many years ago, and she is part of a kind of artistic collective called Icon. She's one of the founding members of Icon in Belfast, and I think I learned my own poetic intelligence-gathering habits largely from Carrie and her brother Ewan, who were really, really good at giving me mixtapes and mix CDs and that kind of thing over the years. And she's been in town for the last week or so, and I'm reminded of how that kind of work gets done, sharing one quotes with each other, that sort of thing. Beside Carrie is Sarah Mason, my partner in crime and matrimony. And she has also had songs on, she had songs on Party of Five in Dawson's Creek, and had a pretty, in the 96, 97, was fairly well known. And around that time, she and I got married, and that was kind of the end of her career in terms of... Yeah, that the celebrity aspect of it anyway. But she keeps writing songs and is just really, really remarkable. And she'll be sharing a song at some point. But she'll also be sitting in with these two fellows who are part of the group Jars of Clay. They'll be doing some covers tonight, and it's Steve Mason and Charlie Lowell, who I've also... Both of these guys I've known a little bit over the last few years, but even more recently. Okay, I want to read Religious Identity. I have a little thing from Chechla Miwush that I'd like to share, and then we'll go into a song. From the poem, from things that get said, from things that show up in songs, really from the get-go, it would be wonderful if we could have questions and comments. Why that song? What does this lyric do for you? When has a sad song made things better for you? Just questions. We want to keep it just as conversational as possible. But here, let me read this. It's called Hear Me from Chechla Miwush, and I hope I got the pronunciation right. Hear me, Lord, for I am a sinner, which means I have nothing except prayer. Protect me from the day of dryness and impotence, when neither a swallow's flight nor peonies, daffodils, and irises in the flower market are a sign of your glory, when I will be surrounded by scoffers and unable, against their arguments, to remember any miracle of yours, when I will seem to myself an impostor and swindler because I take part in religious rites, when I will accuse you of establishing the universal law of death, when I am ready at last to bow down to nothingness and call life on earth a devil's vaudeville. Chechla Miwush. And this is a song called 4 Minute Warning.
Someone's gonna bring me
from the summer, hiding in the forest, running in the fields, laying flat on the ground, just like everybody. Stepping over heads, running from the underground. This is a warning for men.
As David was introducing everyone there, I was thinking that whilst we had laughed when he asked me the other night if I would share some thoughts this evening, and we were laughing because I've written a lot in the last few years about brokenness. I don't recommend doing it when you're on vacation, because quite frankly, I'm feeling really in a good place at the moment. So this is going to be, I've just spent the last couple of days thinking about the themes of this evening. And so I want to share with you some reflections on that, and then a more kind of poetic piece. And Steve and Charlie have kindly agreed that, and we've without any rehearsal, we're just going to try and put some music underneath it and see what happens with that. So I'm looking forward to that, because back in Belfast and Icon, that's the kind of thing we do. It's just, let's provoke ourselves a bit with some spontaneity. So it'll move from a kind of reflective bit into poetic, and I think you'll be able to tell the difference. It's been said that next to silence, music is the closest thing to God. And I'm not here in this space speaking to you as a musician, because that's not what I am. I think of myself as something along the lines of a writer always in becoming. I like words, but more than words, I like the spaces between them. The ellipses that speak to the pauses and the gaps, the unsaid, the words that fail us, the things we cannot utter, the confessions that we dare not make, our speechlessness and our silence. And the art of making an eloquent point is the art of resisting what might slip out, of not saying what we really think or feel. Shortly before his sudden death last winter, the late Irish poet and philosopher John O'Donoghue was interviewed on American Public Radio. His interviewer, Krista Tippett, commented, "Celtic music seems to express the greatest joy and also the deepest sorrow, almost indistinguishable from one another, and yet both a kind of healing force. This is John's response. One of the things I'm always amazed about Irish music is how in some ways the lines of the landscape find their way into the music. The memory of the landscape almost, the memory of the people too, and in some sense, despite the sorrow that we've endured. He went on, I love music. I love poetry as well, of course, and I think of beauty in poetry. But I always think that music is what language would love to be if it could. So next to silence, music is the closest thing to God, and music is what language would be if it could. Another Irishman, Colin McInimara, violin player with my personal favourite band, The Frames, recently released an album called The Hare's Corner. As the tradition goes, at harvest time, there's a corner of the field left uncut, a shelter for the hare. This imagery also speaks to the Gaeltacht, those small pockets of Ireland where the Irish language is still spoken as the first language, like a temporary reprieve from the reaper's blade. It's my belief that art itself can be, as the long grass, a shelter. But surely community too acts in the same way, as long grass protecting us from the reaper's blade. My dear friend Padraig O'Tuama, a Belfast resident like me, and like Colm, a native Irish speaker and a fine poet, shared with me this gift of a line from his mother tongue. And yesterday, I got it tattooed. Erskoa chela a waris nadina, which translates as, in the shelter of each other, the people live. Because we don't get to do this thing called being human on our own. The one thing we have in common is our vulnerability. Frederick Buechner wrote, we need each other, you and I, you stranger who are no stranger. Because to be human is to be unique. We're separate, other, alone, apart. It means I can never get inside your body to look through your eyes and feel what it's like to be you, just as you can't feel what it's like to be inside mine and be me. And that seems to me like a horrifying blessing. At the end of Cameron Crowe's movie Almost Famous, Philip Seymour Hoffman, who plays the rock journalist Lester Bangs, utters what I consider one of my personal favourite lines ever spoken by a human. The only true currency in this bankrupt world is what you share with someone else when you're uncool. But this being uncool with one another, this bridging the gap between us, seems so elusive, so beyond us. Most of the time we are concentrating to avoid, to resisting telling the truth of what it means to be human, of exposing our wounds, and much of the time being human is to feel unsheltered. Art is perhaps what gets language to the things we're too ashamed to say to each other, for fear of being found out as being merely human, or for fear that we're not in agreement about the uncool thing. Music perhaps speaks to the silence between our words and between us. It helps us express the inexpressible, which is perhaps just as easily called the divine, because that silence, that unspoken, is so often the truth. I couldn't write without music. I would not know how. I know no other way of writing than in the context of being inspired by what I hear. It's as if, for me at least, there's this conversation going on between music and writing, a kind of liturgical call and response. So that when a friend makes a mixtape and there's a tongue cover of Bloc Party's The Pioneers with its opening line, if it can be broke, then it can be fixed, then I respond with poetry or prose on my keyboard, adding my words to this conversation of what's broken and what needs fixing. And the very act of writing becomes the fixing. Writing is repairing. The very act of placing words cheek to jowl become the art of survival. Line by line, one survives. To borrow from Wendell Berry, writing becomes one way of practicing resurrection. Practicing resurrection, the daily act and sacred art of bringing what seems dead to life. Where does our personal identity end, and where do our religious or communal or creative identities begin? For we are surely all at our personal core at once religious, communal, and creative. It has been said that we are broken and wounded as human beings, so that God is allowed to dwell in us, break into us, break us open. But I wonder if perhaps God is better understood as the wound itself. For it is that wounded part of us that is so often in need of shelter that yet somehow becomes compassion for the stranger if we dare to be uncool with one another. It is at least that this God of the gaps in us seems at home within our communal and religious and creative selves, seeping out of our pores, in our confessions, our yearnings, our bleeding. My friend Beth Gilmore told me just the other day that a teacher once said of words, "Do you know why they call it spelling? Because you're making spells." There is a magic quality to language, perhaps with music even more so. And I believe the spells we are conjuring are an attempt to tell each other the truth, that so often we feel like everything is broken. Music and art are how we attempt to fix things, to magic redemption. Art, if it's worth anything at all, is an attempt at honesty, that life is both immense joy and deep sorrow, and that these two can seem inextricable. And so often their combined weight is unbearable. In the shelter of art, as in community, is an attempt to speak of what it's like to be out there in the field under the swinging arc of the reaper's blade. We are attempting, yet always failing, and always driven forward by the dissatisfaction of that falling short, to play that secret chord with its minor fall and its major lift. That divine secret is perhaps best said in silence. And after silence, it is music. And after music, it is our words. Music, poetry, prose, these things are how we express the things we so often wish we could tell each other when we are an honest, uncool shelter to one another. Collaboration is the space where being in art and community weave, and where we flourish in the expression and shelter of togetherness. Honest broken art and honest broken community are shelters, and they are shelters to one another. Everything is broken, and each new ending that is its own beginning starts in pieces. Love ends, heart stops, blood freezes, time on hold, life ceases. We're shattered, shard and sinew, all sharp edges of discomfort, harmonious togetherness plucked into discord, fractured, apartness. Broken, barely standing from so much falling and landing, oh my God, this is gonna take a whole lot of mending. Like bone striking tile, pieces scattered so far beyond reach or will to weave together. Broken like plates, gaping with fault lines. When peace ends in battle, we left are known by the creases in doubled overness. For folded over, all of me misses you in parts. Screams are like silences as words fail us. We legion clinging to the surface, waiting for you to come back. We who want nothing, need nothing, feel nothing, hope nothing, love nothing. Against unanswered echoes, we who scratch, expect nothing, get nothing, give nothing, have nothing, grieve nothing, regret nothing. And lie. Be nothing. Stop loving. You'll stop hurting. But then someone within calls, come out. Magicking redemption is what the Savior did. And surely Lazarus died again, but it must have felt like practicing resurrection all the same. Dragged from grave, from tomb, no birth from a womb, no wet rush into gasping air, but dry rasping, like old bones in spasm, death-defying. Come out, come out. Shrugging off shrouds, across a threshold, collapsing back through a door meant for exiting. Come out. Could I meddle with the hinge? Keep breathing? Keep loving, keep bleeding, keep living. For still he sings, less savior, more demon. Come out, take off the death clothes and let him go. Everything is broken. And each new ending that is its own beginning starts with resurrecting in pieces.
As I move this lectern out of the way and move this microphone closer to Katie for her song, and we reserve the right to ask you questions about the song when the song is over, I ask you to envision again the circle that I mentioned, and I want to see if anybody has a question or comment now before we continue. Okay, you're going to have to go one at a time. We have to have some order here. Yes?
The 4-minute warning, could you just talk about what that means? And I really liked it, and it really kind of caught my attention, so I can expand
on it a little bit. Yeah. It's a Radiohead song. They did a record this last year. Called In Rainbows, and it's on the second disc if you bought the big package, the deluxe package. Charlie actually suggested it. Charlie, do you have it?
Yeah. it's a pretty bleak song, and the song is, their version of the song is exactly 4 minutes, and it starts with about a minute of just static noise building. You hardly know that a guitar is going to start playing, and beautiful, simple melody. So it's probably one of the songs, at least on that second disc, that really grabbed me and made me want to play it again the first time I heard it. And there's no bows, there's no wrapping it up at the end of that one. It just sort of hangs out there. It's like, this is a warning. This is just a nightmare. Soon I'm going to wake up. Someone's going to bring me around, running from the bombers, hiding in the forest. It's a pretty desperate cry.
It's a great first song for what's happening tonight, because you're introducing Everything's Broken. This is your warning. Here we go. And here we go.
A void of shrink wrap song, we might say.
No sign.
Anybody have something? There's. We're going to go all the way down, and then we'll have another pause. But anybody have something now? Okay, lots of opportunity. So many phrases, so many good phrases in that one. Hardly even know where to begin. But Drowning in Valleys of Echoes is really staying with me at the moment. Matthew, when I asked Matthew to do this, I said, and if you have anybody you know of who you think might enjoy doing this or be up for being asked to do this, he mentioned Katie, and I was kind of hoping that he would mention Katie as a possibility, and that was just really, really good. Matthew, do you want to go right into it, or do you want to introduce your song? Or
I guess I could try to give it a little introduction.
Okay.
This is a song I put on a record I did, not my last record, but one prior to that one. It's a song written by Stephen Collins Foster. He's the old, if you're not familiar with his name, you're definitely familiar with his music if you've lived in America. Camp Town Races and a lot of these sort of old, Way Down Upon the Suwannee River is another one of his. And I heard this song years ago, and I was really struck by just, there was something about it that I've sort of always been a sucker for sad songs, and this one just kind of stuck with me in particular, and I knew I wanted to put it on a record or record it at some point in time, and so I did on my last record. And I think the thing about the song that I like is it's sort of this moment where he's sort of pointing people to, the beginning of the song starts out, you know, let us pause in life's pleasures and count the many tears. And that's always sort of a puzzling thing. It's definitely not pop music. There's a friend of mine who has a song that he wrote, and I'm trying to remember it. It came to my mind while we were sitting here, and I wish I'd thought about it and looked it up earlier to get the exact line. It's a writer by the name of Don Chaffer, and he has a song on a solo record he did, and a line that says, you know, somebody, we need somebody to bring the sadness back in. He kind of paints this picture of people, sort of this sort of frivolous scene, and he says, we need somebody to bring the sadness back in. There's something about pointing to the sadness that sort of, one, reminds us of our humanity, but also sort of maybe causes us to pay attention a little more. So this is what I like about this song, called Hard Times.
We all sub sorrow with the poor. Many days you have lingered all around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more. It's a song and the sigh of the weary. Oh, hard times, hard times come again no more. Many days have you lingered all around my cabin door. Oh, hard song and and the sigh of the weary. Oh, hard times, hard times come again. Many days have you lingered all around my cabin door. Oh, hard toils her life away with a worn out heart whose better days are over. While her voice, it should be merry, oh, it's sighing all the day. Oh, heart. It's the song and the sigh of the weary. Oh, hard times, hard times come again no more. Many days have you lingered all around my cabin door. Oh,
thank you so much, Matthew. As I move the microphone a little ways over toward Brian, is there somebody with a word or a question? Don't feel pressure. You don't have to. There'll be time. Yes, Jeff Little.
I don't know if I need to say this loud to the mic or what, but I was just thinking, is part of our condition experiencing sad songs, is part of the interest in it that we romanticize the sadness in our life. I ran like a marathon several years ago. It was actually the first time I ever did it. And I remember very succinctly, late in the race, I was running behind a woman that had pinned on her back, "What is endured in pain is remembered as sweet." And I remembered that, and actually, I think it's true. At least it was for the spirit of God. Applying it to music and allowing the sadness of an emotional experience, do we remember it as somehow sweet with the advantage of time?
Anybody from up here have anything on any of that?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I get that. I think, I wonder, and I've wondered as we prepared for this, that in the naming of sadness, we're acknowledging a part of ourselves that we often kind of partition from the better of ourselves we consider. But that in naming that and experiencing that, we're in those moments reconciled as a full human being with joy and sadness. And so the romance, I wonder, comes from feeling completely ourselves, maybe.
That brings, someone else will probably have something too, but from Carrie's piece, writing becomes the fixing, writing is repair. And I recall a conversation between William F. Buckley and Allen Ginsberg. And Ginsberg was going on about something. And Buckley interrupts him and says, well, you know, what your commentary is really more poetic than analytical. So speaking very dismissively. And then Ginsberg jumps in and says, poesy is the oldest form. And he said, what? He said, poetry is an older form than analysis. That the lyrical precedes the analytical. And I thought that was kind of nice. This idea of, well, I know with my wife, Sarah, I'm pretty good with sentences. Maybe too good with sentences sometimes. And in ways of explaining things away. For Sarah, I would say, that until she's gone lyrical with whatever we're looking at, she has yet to... That's an older form of processing, we might say, than paragraphs or explaining things away. And I don't want to dominate, but I have to say that I overheard her speaking on the phone today to someone, and I ripped off a poem by writing down what she said. And she was describing a friend who's going through some difficult times, a friend who expects prayer to yield a sort of instantaneous redemption, make it right. And Sarah said of the friend, you know, it's not like God's going to download an epiphany on her. Like an immediate, boom, there we are. And she went on to say the epiphany, as it comes, will come through the pain. Not through, like, come on, epiphany, but will come in the context of the pain. And the epiphany will name the pain. That's what made me think of it, what Steve said, that it's a form of naming, doing justice to experience. And when lyrics don't do justice to the experience, that's we could probably have a whole nother evening on that, on bad songs say so much or something like that. But with that, if you have a burning question or comment, hold on to it for a moment, because I want there to be more song than speaking, or speaking through song, and I'm going to give it to you, Brian. You can talk about... Yeah, come on up. Okay. You can explain it before, or you can just do it and then we'll talk.
I would rather just play, I think.
All right.
If I missed a sunrise while I was sleeping, I fold infections that have grown. Well, I'd be sorry, you know. If I missed a sunset while I was sleeping, I fold emotions that have grown. Will I be sorry, you know? This you know. But what if I said I'm sorry for all of my sins? Woo-hoo-hoo. Woo-hoo-hoo. Said he was saving my soul, would it make me happy at all? Would it matter at all? If I met Satan and I sold him my soul, would it make me happy at all? Would it matter at all? Not at all. 'Cause you know that I just couldn't wake up happy. If I was sleeping on gold, woo-hoo. Ooh, ooh, ooh. but you can't even tell. But I can't even feel. I wanna feel it, but I can't even feel. I wanna feel it, but I can't even feel. I wanna feel it, but I can't even feel. I wanna feel it, but I can't even feel. Oh my, oh my, oh my, oh my, oh my, my, oh my, oh my.
That was really, really good. I guess if I can, I would like, would you be up for, are you gonna, there's a poem by Charles Bukowski called The Bluebird. Anyone know that one? Bluebird? Okay. Andrea, who's helping put this thing together, is gonna read it. And after that, we will do a little more question comment. Thank you, Andrea.
The Bluebird. There's a bluebird in my heart that wants to get out, but I'm too tough for him. I say, stay in there. I'm not going to let anybody see you. There's a bluebird in my heart that wants to get out, but I pour whiskey on him and inhale cigarette smoke. And the whores and the bartenders and the grocery clerks never know that he's in there. There's a bluebird in my heart that wants to get out, but I'm too tough for him. I say, stay down. Do you want to mess me up? You want to screw up the works. You want to blow my book sales in Europe. There's a bluebird in my heart that wants to get out, but I'm too clever. I only let him out at night sometimes, when everybody's asleep. I say, I know that you're there, so don't be sad. But then I put him back. But he's singing a little in there. I haven't quite let him die. And we sleep together like that, with our secret pact. And it's nice enough to make a man weep. But I don't weep, do you?
Anybody have something before we go back around? I don't know if we're going to, well, yes.
The woman in the middle.
Carrie?
Carrie.
Oh, hi.
Carrie,
yes,
hi. Thank you so much for sharing what you did. And I'm just curious, when you wrote Folded Over, All of Me Misses You in Parts, I think that's probably, it's ironic that tonight we're talking about trapped feelings, and that's the first time I've felt something in a really long time. So thank you. And I'm curious if you would share what you were writing about, if you would, if that's not sufficient.
Well, somebody called what we do in ICON therapy in public once, so yeah, it's a bit too late for me to try and hide the truth. I think it wasn't necessarily specifically about this, but a significant amount of what I've written about in the last few years has been about loss. Either through death, or through divorce, or through relationships breaking down one way or another. All of those things have provided a deep well from which to draw. And so I suppose, whilst I wasn't, when I wrote that line, I wasn't thinking of a specific situation necessarily, but maybe something that actually, maybe it's something that's featured in all of those situations, was that idea of quite literally being doubled over. In an agonized heap. So yes, it's that, and yeah, I've been in that place many times. So that was, it's in some respect not one specific thing, but I think every loss I've probably ever known is meets that place, you know. And I think whenever I go into a dark spell, it's a kind of reenactment of that in some regards. You know, the trigger is usually whatever is going to take me back to that place where you find yourself on your knees, so kind of folded up. And then from it, and I find a really strong imagery then in the idea of then how on earth do you get yourself back upright again, you know? So yeah, that's what it comes from. But thank you, and yeah.
Okay, we'll have another opening for back and forth. But now, whatever y'all want to do. I mean, you've got a few, whichever one you can decide on. And again, write stuff down as it occurs to you. We'll keep bringing it to the front.
Mad world, mad that's can anybody name the artist of that song?
Tears for Fears.
Tears for Fears. The unacknowledged Radiohead influence, I might say. The verse, the second verse, I had never really followed those words before. Those are some devastatingly heavy words.
It follows yes. that it's the same reaction I get when I go to school now to see my kids. Like, I feel the, what is it? Sits and listens to, okay, went to school and I was very nervous. No one knew me. Hello, teacher, tell me what's my lesson. I could just, yeah, there's something
what's
about that,
that.
Immediate panic when I see it. What have I forgotten today?
Waiting for the day they feel good. Man, oh man. Anything from this part of the circle? Yes?
This is actually going back to Katie's song. The line you mentioned about drowning in valleys of echoes. I was wondering, that often it seems like when we feel broken, our own repetitive thoughts over and over are like echoes. And I was kind of wondering if that's what you were getting at, or if you had another image or thought in mind when you were there.
Yeah, I feel like that song was written when I was completely betrayed by a friend who was really, really going through crazy hard times, and a lot of that came out in manipulation of me. Anyways, it was alluding to the past of this person and feeling like the abuse that this person had endured was probably kind of bouncing around in their head and bouncing around in their lives still, and it was manifesting in the present in a very different way. So the life that I think that can take on over time can kind of come and go and echo.
I'll ask you guys to imagine yourselves in a kind of circle. And do any of you have a song that feels... Well, let me add a little story. The circle that I described at the beginning, the guitar came to me and I didn't have anything. But I did know, for some reason, all of the lyrics to a song that Elvis Costello wrote for Roy Orbison called The Comedians, which came to mind. And I recited it nervously, but it was my contribution to the thing, the vibe. And I guess, do any of you have one? I mean, we can go back over here. Does anybody have one that feels like it fits in with the way things are going? Nothing springing to mind, I'm guessing? Okay, well, it'll come back. It'll come back. And I want y'all to do either of the other ones. Well, as y'all are thinking about it, I'll open it up again. Because I saw some hands that I didn't get to call on. I saw a hand. Yes, Justin.
Well, I apologize that I arrived late, so someone else already asked this. Do I look fat? No. It seems that there's a tangible discomfort within the world of contemporary Christian music with addressing, with foregrounding this subject matter. In other words, and I guess this is for the Jars guys, mostly, but does the artist have an ethical or spiritual responsibility to address the kind of brokenness and ambiguity of life? And is Christian music, by and large, failing to do that? And how can that be remedied, if at all?
Maybe not, actually. Yeah. I mean, I would say that our responsibility is to tell the truth about what we experience, you know, spiritually, relationally, socially, as citizens. And so if that's brokenness and sadness, which much of it is in my experience, and it sounds like much of our experience is up here, then yes, I would argue there should be more of a place for that, these kind of songs, you know, maybe ones that hold up some hope along with the hopelessness in many cases. But, you know, maybe part of the battle that we fight or often talk about in jars is, well, how do we tell the truth about what we're going through and learning, and also have it be something that Christian radio in particular will play, you know, because they'd rather have the puppy dogs, honestly. And that there's a conflict there, you know, that's sort of the tension that we walk.
Sorry not to let that seep into a lot of other conversations about our understanding of Westernized Christianity, too. That telling the truth looks different in the United States than it does other places.
I think your song, Oh My God, from Raylan's album, would be perfect here. I don't think you have to do that. But,
yeah.
Thank God. It is.
No, it's, yeah.
You,
yeah.
That just, I commend Jars of Clay for writing that.
That was kind of Dan's. was a friend of ours, Steve Garber. I don't know if he was quoting someone else, but he said the artist's role is to look at the world and describe it. And I think a lot of what I've heard already from everybody gets to the difficulty of reconciling this life with the hope. That we believe in. And Dan started just with verses of that, and then at the end it's purely just a rant describing the world, saying it's not as it should be, and why is that? And believing that ultimately, as I think Matt was the one that had the idea of every human being on some level from some place in life says those words, whether it's to curse God or bless him, is oh my God, you know, such a powerful phrase. But to acknowledge for good or evil, better for worse, that yeah, he's there in the story somehow. It's powerful.
Do you know what song you want to do?
I'm feeling Dig.
Dig.
Dig, is that feel better?
It's Dig.
Yeah.
Could you maybe introduce it?
Yeah, this is a song actually we covered a while back. Great songwriter, musician, Gene Eugene wrote this. And it's just, he just gets to it. I'll use one of those stupid, obscure musician things. He gets it, man. This is called Dig.
Big idea. I had a lazy eye. I broke the sacred seal. I told a lazy lie. I've had my conscience bend. I've had my patience tried. I've been up in the desert and down by the riverside. Will the eagle fly if the sky's untrue? Do the faithful sigh because they are so few? Remember when I cry, remember when you hard, the treasure fine. To the sea, I'll crawl on my knees. Feel it coming in, feel it going out. Water covers sin, blood covers doubt. So I begin again, again the healing bow. There was a time when I might have surrendered, but not now. Consult the cards to measure mine. The earth is hard, treasure find. At the sea, I wait on my knees. Consult the stars to measure time. The earth is hard, treasure find. To the sea,
if it came to you, I think it probably would. Again, the healing vow. Did I hear that right?
Again, the healing vow.
Vow, okay. As Matthew's getting ready for this one, anybody have a question or a comment? Yes, Andy.
This is a first, so this is the first like a several part series, right?
Yes.
What are the other points that say?
Do they come to mind? The titles of the other two?
This is on brokenness, and this is heading towards the final one, which will be on images of redemption, and how, you know, which is more sort of visionary in terms of where we're headed. And the middle piece will be, so how do we get there? I mean, what's the journey? What does it look like? What's the shape of it? What forms of help do we have along the way that can buoy us up? So it's kind of, but this is the first piece, which is more of the kind of tough stuff, you know, which is called, Luke calls it, everything is broken.
In that case, I guess it's sort of an open question. Anybody who feels like they want to sort of jump in, I love your thoughts. Do you think that sadness then, or this brokenness, is sort of only valuable or useful as like a starting point towards redemption? Is this just, or is it something that has value on its own, whether it gets fixed or not, or healed or not, or is that even the right question to be asking? Yes.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I'll shoot for that. I like that. I think yes and no. I think acknowledging and sitting with sadness on its own definitely has value, no question about it, and where that's just what one sits with. But I suppose, well, this is a very subjective thing, but I can't imagine it not then being part of a process. Because I certainly know that if I was to stay in that place, not artistically necessarily, just in life, well, to be quite blunt, I don't think I'd be sitting here, to be honest. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like, but at the time, I think it feels like it's the end point. But then in retrospect, and I think it was interesting that that comment earlier about, do we romanticize sadness? I mean, I think more than it may be, I think it can be romanticized, but I think it's about time. That epiphany is a kind of perspective that you get. So I think often when you're in a place of brokenness, it feels like that's all there is. And sometimes I think that it's in time you see pain in perspective, and in a way where it's not hurting in the present, and so one can see how it fits into the grander scheme of things, that idea of joy and sorrow in balance. And I think sometimes life is about being in that place of extreme brokenness and absolutely having to find some kind of redemption, if that just means literally getting yourself up off the floor and, you know, willing yourself on one more hour or week or whatever it might be. So I think it's maybe yes and no in that, if that makes sense.
Last week, Bill Friskick's Warren came in, talked about a lot of things. Eminem was part of our subject matter, and there was the question of, you know, his anger, which is very specific, very much objectionable subject matter, we could say. But it is kind of a witness, I think, that we get to receive, whether we, you know, as truthful as a kind of testimony, that I wouldn't want to say that this complaint, whether it's in a poem like The Wife's Lament or The Wanderer, that it's only of value if we can shrink wrap it and give it a fairy tale ending or something like that. So, yeah, definitely worth preserving. It's interesting to me that the church, when it arrived, you know, within what became the United Kingdom, that it preserved some of these poems, that, and sometimes they were cleaned up a little and made a little more prayerful. But these pagan complaints were preserved as a good in themselves. Some of that comes to mind with a question, too.
I was going to make one comment about that. One of the forms of music that we've been looking at is Gothic music, which, of course, has various types, but one in one form. I think we've been talking about how if God can be considered, as Tillich says, as one's ultimate concern, then in some of that music, despair does achieve a kind of status of the divine. I mean, there's a sense in which just living into despair becomes a kind of ultimate worldview. So I think there are forms of, within music anyway, there are certain worldviews in which one could say it's the beginning and the end. Mm-hmm. And I was hearing some of that in, I think, Brian's, not in that form, but mm-hmm. there's a sense in which that one just simply says, I feel that nothing can make a difference. I don't feel, you know, and when one gets to that point, you know, then one is really, to some extent, living, I think, into that. As a mm-hmm.
The sleeping on gold part.
Yeah.
Man, oh man. Yeah.
The irony of that, though, I think, is that as you sing that, by virtue of you singing that to us, that moment is making the difference for the listener. Yeah. And so the very words are the actual difference. It mm-hmm. becomes the difference that it's, you know, assuming it's not making.
He's back to the artist's witness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing the witness to bear.
Right.
You guys want to do Pearl?
This one, I love this song. It's such, so beautifully written. It's an Emmylou Harris song called Pearl.
Oh, the dragons are gonna fly tonight. They're circling low and inside tonight. And it's another round in the losing fight. Out along the great divide tonight. We are aging soldiers in an ancient war. Seeking out some half-remembered shore. We drink our fill and still we thirst for more. Asking if there's no heaven, what is this hunger for? Our path is worn, our feet are poor. Up our prayer.
and fear the silence is the voice of God. Come but bring no sweet relief. Time is a brutal but a careless thief. It takes our lot and leaves behind the grief. It is the heart that kills us in the end. Just a one more road. Sailors lost out on the sea. We were always headed toward eternity, hoping for a glimpse of Galilee. Like falling stars to the universe,
was that the pain become the pearl?
Oh, Jewin.
Yes, yes. We are nearing the end of our allotted time. I'll take another question, and I will read a tiny little miwoosh thing, and I'm going to ask Sarah to sing a song called "The River." Sarah. As I mentioned, her songwriting is, she has to, and this was, if she leaves me alone to get some writing done, I'll maybe have a paragraph after a day. I took all the kids, left her alone with a guitar for a couple of hours, and she gave us "The River." Are you ready to do it?
Yes,
sir. Okay, as you're doing that, I'm going to ask for another question. Or a comment from someone. Yes.
Who wrote "The Pearl"?
Emmylou Harris.
She wrote it.
Yeah, she wrote it.
She thought about that.
I'm sorry.
Red Dirt Girl came out several years ago, and it's actually one of the few records that she wrote most of the record. Because usually she sings other people's songs, but it proved that she was. I mean, she's just a brilliant lyricist.
She is.
Yeah.
Boulder, Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to mention, too, that even though we're nearing the end of our allotted time, I think I can speak for everyone when I say that they're all interested in talking to each and every one of you in some capacity. Blogs, websites, music that they want to share, ideas they want to share. So if you're inclined to speak to someone up here before you leave, please do it. Or do any of you not want to be spoken to? Or prefer to be escorted out or something? Okay, this is called Religion Comes. Religion comes from our pity for humans. They are too weak to live without divine protection. Too weak to listen to the screeching noise of the turning of infernal wheels. Who among us would accept a universe in which there was not one voice of compassion, pity, understanding? To be human is to be completely alien amid the galaxies, which is sufficient reason for erecting, together with others, the temples of an unimaginable mercy.
Flannery O'Connor, short story, The River.
Yeah.
Your take on it.
Okay. And has anybody read The River? Okay. It's not a happy story, is it? But somehow, it's okay. And if at the end, it's very, very easy, and in The River I'm gone, if you feel like you can sing it, it's a better song sung altogether. I could never get close enough to your fire. Now that my flame's gone out, I won't try.
Out.
there is, can I say, I'm asking, can I say folks can go, but they're going to play one more? As is it all?
It's all cool.
It's all, okay, nobody's offended if any of you have to go out and see a movie or something. But, there was one.
Oh, okay. I think it's a great movie.
I forgot about this one, which was also prepared for this evening. And I want you to introduce it, Steve. Explain.
Oh, sure. Well, Paul Simon is brilliant.
The end.
The end. Actually, we were on the bus recently in Iconoclasts. It's this thing on, I don't know if it's the Independent Film Channel or Sundance. It was Paul Simon and Lorne Michaels from SNL together, and it was amazing. Great nuggets of Paul Simon-ness. And then Lorne Michaels is just brilliant. And actually, which leads me to another one which has nothing to do with this, but Dave Chappelle and Maya Angelou were on the next show, and I recommend both of those because different and yet similar. If you don't have his record, Surprise, get it immediately. It's absolutely wonderful. It gives me hope that these artists that have built a career and a life, that some of them actually aren't sitting on the life they built, but they're still working hard at finding the good bits and writing further about that and challenging themselves, because I didn't think Paul Simon had this record in him. It was really
great. Oh, is it
right there?
It's just one sheet.
I think so. So this is, I don't know what this is called, but it's the first song. Thank you.
thanks to everybody again for coming, and do keep the conversation going. Thank you.